This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, I hope you're having a happy day today. It's Wednesday. It's definitely warming up. August. Just ask Gugu to bring me the aircon control. But you know what? This is not working because it's dead and the batteries inside are probably 300 years old.
Oh, dear.
So you'll have to find the other one.
Sure, it's the right one.
Yes, I'm sure it's the right one, Gugu.
Oh, you used it yesterday.
So Gugu says to me, the control was in here yesterday. So I said, let me look. Oh, you know, it's still not there. You'll have to go and fetch it for me. So go and find another one, Gugu. Gugu's having a pretty awful day today. I mean, he's mostly this week, he's been quite intelligent, but Jesus, today it's like his brains were sucked out of his head.
Oh, my word.
Did we do, like, psychiatric evaluation before hiring?
Where's the human resources department in this place?
No, he doesn't need psychiatric evaluation. He's quite stable, but I think he's just having a really, really bad day. All right.
You're so sympathetic.
No, I'm not.
Oh.
I'm not. Apparently, this is very good news, especially for a witch, a male witch like Eddie. They found the remains of a 19th century vampire.
Yes.
What? Yes. Vampire. Go on.
So the man's name is John Barber. They're calling his bones JB55.
Oh.
A man from Connecticut.
But is he really a vampire?
He's been dug out. He lived in the 19th century. They're calling him a vampire because of a very specific thing. It's firstly the way his body was buried. He died normally and then was buried. Then he was dug up,
mm-hmm.
okay, and reburied
mm-hmm.
with his head and limbs placed on top of his rib cage.
Uh-oh.
In a skull and crossbones pattern.
So how does that make you a vampire?
That pattern was used in the late 18th and 19th centuries to indicate that someone was suspected of being a vampire.
Oh. Okay. So it's crazy people in the 1800s. That's what it is. It's
that's
not
exactly
a vampire.
What it is. So what happened is...
I still like this music. I'm going to keep on going with the vampire idea.
A DNA researcher in the U.S. Armed Forces has now said that tuberculosis on this man left ulcers on his lungs.
Oh.
Which causes their skin to go pale.
Wait, what? TB
causes ulcers on the lungs, yeah.
And that causes a person's skin to go pale.
Yes.
A person like that may also have had blood stains on their mouths from coughing up blood. Had their gums recede to give them the appearance that their teeth had become elongated.
So they would have thought, that John Barnes.
He's a vampire.
Poor guy.
It was so tough.
Then also, as corpses decompose, bodies degrade, including the lengthening of fingernails and bloating.
Yes.
But hundreds of years ago, these actions were interpreted as signs that someone was a vampire.
Well, the poor guy was suffering already with TB, and he wasn't having an easy time, right? And then he also had to be accused of being a vampire. He's probably like living in some village in
minding
America.
His own business.
Yeah, he's just chilling. Yeah, it's like those women who were suspected of being a witch. Because they had a birthmark or something?
Yes.
Yeah. And they would take these women, they'd pull them through the streets of a village, strap them to a wooden stake, and set them on fire. And the whole village, the children, the humans are
horrible.
Revolting. I mean, this. So you imagine you're a young girl. Let's say you're in your late teens, and you have maybe a little bit of a hook nose. Okay?
Yeah.
Someone in the village doesn't like you, a mean girl.
Mm.
She says, Cynthia in that house on Elm Street, that's Cynthia. I saw her with a pot and making a potion, and she had a cat. Mm-hmm. And then the whole village goes, she's definitely a witch! And
they burn her!
And they run down the street, they grab poor old Cynthia, they put her on a stake, and they burn her in the middle of the town. And the poor woman... She didn't even know.
Mm.
Cynthia got home from work that day after cleaning the pots and pans at some house down the road, and she was busy making herself soup or something. And then suddenly the whole village arrived and goes, aha, see, she is making a potion.
And then that launches itself into witch hunts.
Yeah.
And there were vampire hunts as well.
Did you ever read Roald Dahl's book, The Witches?
Oh, my niece is actually reading it right now.
Okay, so I loved that book. So we were at my brother's birthday. We went out for breakfast on Saturday for his birthday with my two nephews, who are 5 and 3.
You had to think about that for a second. So
in one of the rooms in this restaurant, because it's a restaurant with a whole bunch of different rooms, right? Uh-huh. In one of the rooms, there were a whole lot of women going, and all this stuff, but like 15 or so women. So I said to Luke, because he's just read The Witches, or he watched the movie, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I said, Tim, do you hear those women? My sister tipped me off. She's like, that sounds like a meeting of the witches. So I go, do you hear those women? So he goes, no. So I go, that's a meeting of the witches. Do you remember that movie with where they all wear gloves because they have very long fingernails, and they have square toes, and they wear wigs, and they want to turn children into mice? And he was fascinated. No, he loved it.
Oh, he was fascinated. Oh.
He was horrified.
No, he was pretty scared, and he wanted me to go with him so we could look into the room and see the witches. And then I pointed to the ugliest woman in the room and said to him,
shame.
That is the Grand High Witch.
Oh, my gosh.
And he loved this. He was obsessed for about 2.5 hours.
It?
Oh, for sure. 100%.
Oh, casually, he'll be bringing up your name in therapy one day.
No, he's going to grow up being very wary of creepy
ugly
looking
people.
Ugly people, which is good. I'm always wary of ugly looking people. That's why I'm scared of looking in the mirror so often. What's that?
You know,
wake up and brush my teeth. Oh, monster! No, it's just me.
Your life principles are fascinating to discover day after day.
You know, I think it's fun to put like crazy imagination into your little nephew's
head. Felt so defied when I figured out things like there was no Father Christmas, there was no Easter Bunny.
Really? You were upset about it?
That's... Yeah, I felt like I'd been lied to.
You mean there's no Father Christmas?
No. Dear.
I don't get much joy out of it, but it more is intimidating to me. And that's why parenting is still such a far-off concept for me in my own life. It's like, shucks, I have to shape their life. Like,
yeah,
no, I have to
no,
be
no,
positive.
You see,
I don't want to do any of that.
You could be an uncle and you can tell them fun stories like that, and it'll color their lives in a little bit. I mean, Roald Dahl was a genius. Those books of his are the best.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think I gave Luke the whole set last year for his birthday, and he's obviously too young to read them now, but one day he'll love them. I was obsessed with George's Marvelous Medicine and The Witches and the BFG and
James and the Giant Peach
and Revolting Rhymes and all of that stuff.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes, that and Asterix and all this stuff. This made my childhood interesting.
Yeah,
I loved it.
It
gave me
true.
A love of books and imagination. And you know, there's so little that kids get these days and that spurs on imagination. I mean, if you are a 5-year-old and you imagine that in a room, in a restaurant, is a meeting of the witches, suddenly going away for your dad's birthday for breakfast is fun.
Having to sit still at the table.
Right. Suddenly it makes that one of the most adventurous days of your life. Otherwise, it's just breakfast with the family.
Yeah,
no, I grew up like
and
that.
When he gets to school on Monday and he says to everybody at school, they go, what did you do this weekend? I saw a meeting of the witches at a restaurant.
And then they're going to write a letter to Dear Mr. Cliff.
They probably will.
Your son's delusional.
They probably will. Yeah.
We need to burn him.
Burn.
Yes.
All right.
Hey, want an update on that Brazilian gang leader? That dressed up as his daughter.
I still just can't get the photo of him out of my head.
So
it's because that silicone mask is like misplaced and the eyes look sunken.
Well, also the glasses are too high up.
Yeah, they're all skew because the bridge of the nose of the
just
mask.
Just do yourself a favor today if you need a laugh. Go and Google Brazilian, what is he?
Gang leader.
Dresses up as daughter.
Okay, now.
Let's get out of jail.
I don't know how to make this segue, but he's dead.
What happened?
I'm not...
What? What?
Yeah,
what
so
happened?
After
what?
This...
What?
So, he's been found dead in his cell, okay?
Aye.
So, after this escape attempt, he was put into solitary confinement.
Sure.
And he committed suicide.
How? Shame. How do you do that? How did he do it?
It doesn't say how.
Hardy-da.
However, it is egg hardy-da. There's egg on the face of the prison because they were the ones who released this picture of him trying to put on the mask and stuff.
Yeah, it's a pretty bad picture. Video. I would have killed myself if that picture was the only one of me.
They did that to show, you know, oh, look, we stopped an attempted escape. They were trying to... Okay, because this prison is notorious.
Notorious, yeah.
If you think of the worst jail in Brazil,
okay,
this is one of them. Just last month...
How bad is it?
What do you mean?
How bad is the prison?
Very bad. Very, very bad.
This is your theme for this morning's news. I hope all your stories can be used for it.
Because of overcrowding, this is the second major humiliation. Yeah. Because just last month, 58 prisoners were killed in the jail. 16 of them were beheaded.
During an eruption of
horrific gang violence.
I heard about this prison.
Yes.
This is a prison where... Oh,
so no wonder he's committed
goodness.
Suicide.
Sia, calm down. Tell us, use your words.
You can't calm down. What? So there was this major riot, as you noted. And then some people were beheaded. Do you know what some of the inmates did? They took some of their heads and they played soccer with them. What ruthless bastard are you to not only kill an inmate who you woke up and went to bed with every single day, then you think, I need to let off some steam. Let's play some soccer, boys, and let's chop someone's head off and use John's head.
Yeah, it doesn't even bounce properly. I mean, like a soccer ball. Soccer ball's
well,
properly
it
round. I agree.
Between 7 and 11 kilograms, I think. It's quite
first
heavy.
Of all, it's, I mean, really bad dynamics for soccer because it's heavier than a soccer ball.
Mm.
Have you ever kicked a head around?
It's not round.
No, I can proudly say
round.
I haven't.
It's got ears, so it usually stops
and
on the ears.
A big
side.
Nose.
Big nose. Sometimes that also stops it from going round properly. I mean, if you're trying to dribble, that's a real problem. It's unpredictable.
You might get your foot stuck in the mouth.
Yeah.
Now I need to find this video for you guys.
Plus, so of course, you get blood on your shoes, which sucks. Especially if you kick the neck area.
So now do you understand why this guy tried to escape firstly and secondly committed suicide when he couldn't?
What a horrible prison.
Things must be really, really bad.
Yeah, this, you see, this is why prisons like that, you could forget about someone rehabilitating. It's never going to happen. I mean, you've gone to a prison
not
like that.
With the
you come out worse.
Oh. Have you ever hated someone so much that you would...
play soccer with their cut-off head.
No. I've never even thought of that until you mentioned it.
I'm sure I've seen it in a movie, because when you said it, I thought, isn't that a movie?
That is...
it's so
twisted.
Scary.
Yeah, you know what? Sorry to the dude who tried to escape and then killed himself. It's bad.
In other news, a woman from Louisiana says that the meth that was found in her vagina is not hers, and she didn't know how it got there.
Sorry?
So a Louisiana woman has been arrested after she had stolen money from her boyfriend while he was in the shower.
Yeah?
She's been arrested.
Yeah?
During a police search, a body search, they found a bag of meth in her vagina. She claims that she doesn't know how it got there, and it's definitely not hers. You know, you get the...
Oh, yeah, she's just... someone else put it in her vagina, please. What a ridiculous idea. You know, someone like that, if you're going to lie, make it a good lie. Like, you've got to say, Bill Cosby came around and... you know, he's in jail, so you can't use him as an excuse. I'm trying to think of a better one. There's actually no way you can get away from stuff that's hidden in your vagina. That's really you.
Well, you do get these I-didn't-know-I-was-pregnant stories.
Hmm.
Are you going to believe a meth addict?
I could pull off this lie. I see how she could pull it off.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I was at the bar. I had a drink. I ended up being spiked. I woke up the next morning.
With a very uncomfortable vagina.
Yes.
Mm. With a gram of meth in it.
Wait, how are her teeth?
Is it only a gram? That's not a lot, though.
She's not smiling in her...
she's a pretty girl.
Mug shots, yeah.
She's a pretty girl.
It was just a gram?
Yeah, it was a gram in a clear plastic bag.
Yeah.
1 gram?
She's got to be careful, because if you get it too far up the vagina, it can get lost up there, and then it can cause infections and God knows what else.
And a very weird high.
Mm. Vagina high.
A virgin.
Listen.
People are so sick.
They have. I mean, she could be quite good at hide and seek. If she's being creative and thinking about, where can I put this in my vagina?
It's such a bizarre thought.
It must be so uncomfortable. How do you walk, let alone how do you cough?
Yeah, how do you get that?
You can't possibly cross your legs.
Maybe it's a bit of an itch.
And then, never mind. We could go so many ways with the story, but I think regardless, right, let's just not go anywhere with it.
Let's move on, because that's ridiculous.
So you know the singer Deborah Cox, right?
Yeah, sure.
She was big in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like R&B.
Not really anymore, though.
No.
You don't bump into people and go, oh, Deborah Cox is awesome.
She was of that class of singer where every single R&B music video had water in it, a stereotypical just like hulky man for no reason.
Yeah.
Mm.
R&B.
Yes, they had coordinated dance moves and they snapped
always.
In.
She's been slating SAA online.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why was she here?
She was actually...
Deborah Cox, you see how she's fallen from favor. She was here and nobody even knows.
She was in Ghana. She was at the Ghana World Music Festival performing.
Take it back. All right.
In Accra. And firstly, the plane was 3 hours late.
Yeah.
Okay. Secondly...
That's horrible.
She said... Okay, so these are her tweets. So disappointed in South African Airlines. After 3 hours delay on the plane to take care of a damaged door, they still insisted on flying the damaged plane, which later had to turn back to Accra. Mm-hmm. Concern for our safety? None. Then she said, will no answers, I think she means well, no answers as to when another plane will be coming in or whether or not it'll be a new plane. Passengers disgruntled, kids vomiting, scared, shook.
Nuts.
Terrible way they handled the situation at Fly SAA. She then alleged that there was a fire in the cockpit, but SAA spokesperson Tlali has denied this allegation. He said there wasn't a fire in the cockpit.
Oh, Tlali. So nice you say it twice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally she said, landed in Washington safely, happy I'll be able to fulfill my contractual commitments and when I get back to work. Despite the incident, I had a beautiful time in Accra, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but basically she doesn't want to fly SAA again, and I can't blame her.
To us, it's not much of a surprise, but what got me chuckling with this whole series of tweets was seeing a bunch of South Africans starting to tweet SAA, saying, how can you embarrass us like this? You know, it sounds like a parent who's disappointed in their children when guests come over. Like, you know, we have guests, you know. Yes. You should be behaving properly with visitors.
You should eat with your knife and fork.
Yes.
It made me feel like defending SAA and saying, who's she to come and moan about our airline?
No, I'm of that group of people who's like, SAA, come on now. You know, we can deal with your shit. But now other people outside have to see your shit as well. Come on.
Yeah.
Get your act together. I was pissed off.
No, you know, South Africans, we're so stupid. We really are. Like, our airline is not something that we should be proud of anymore. They're a bit of a disaster. They've got no money. The quality and standards are dropping.
Mm.
I'm nervous about them because even though I've had very good experiences up to now, I believe, just like with Eskom, there isn't as much maintenance going on. I don't know if it's right or not. I haven't done the research, but given the chance, I'll probably fly with someone else. That's me. I've made a consumer decision. So if you don't like it, get stuffed.
Well, talking about...
Deborah Cox.
Talking about quality and having to defend ourselves here. South Africa.
Yes.
This winter in Disneyland event that took place in Polokwane.
How come I never heard about this?
Let's just discuss it. So, Leanne, to bring it up to speed.
It's not an actual Disney event.
No.
Okay.
So
it's not like Disney on Ice or whatever those things are called.
But it was promoted in that way. There is someone and a team of people in Polokwane who decided to make some money by hosting a Winter in Disneyland event in the middle of nowhere in Polokwane.
Uh-huh.
So using the Disney name, they promoted it in that way. They said there'd be Disney characters in attendance. Of course, you'll walk into the magical world of Disneyland. There'll be great music as well. Oh, bring your kids. It will be fantastic. Turns out, couldn't be further from the truth.
It was
badly dressed.
So badly dressed. You gotta see the picture to believe it. Like Winnie the Pooh looks like he's got thalidomide, you know, poisoning.
Yes, there was Tigger, Winnie the Pooh. There was another character as well there.
Tigger looks like a leopard instead of a tiger.
They look anorexic.
So bad.
They look like the SPCA should be called to save them. Because they look like they haven't been fed for so long. It was actually Winnie the Pooh who's missing an eye.
Oh, Pooh. But surely a person should know not to mess with Disney when it comes to copyright stuff.
Well, people are less than smart. Listen, by putting this together.
Here's the truth. Disney's never going to go to fucking horrible Polokwane, are they? So, in other words, Polokwane had to make a plan.
Oh, yeah, it was Mickey Mouse, Tigger, and Winnie the Pooh.
Mickey Mouse. You got to see the Mickey Mouse.
I think the first...
It's like Mickey Rat.
That's so awkward.
The first telltale sign that this was not an official and authorized Disney event should have been the fact that an alcoholic brand was sponsoring the said event. So come to Winter in Disneyland Polokwane, proudly brought to you by X-Beer. That should have been the first sign. So adults had to pay 80 rand. Children had to pay 50 rand. They got
like
to the event.
A nursery school that's sponsored by Crystal Meth.
They got to the event and people who attended there said there were no decorations at all. There were these unfortunate costumes and also inappropriate music. Imagine Walt Disney's probably turning in his grave to know that there was an event somewhere and there was the F-bomb being dropped and pop that and suck that and lick that. So Disney has now had to put out a statement.
And it was sold out.
Do you know what song they used?
Completely.
Shame.
Do you know what song they used?
Oh, no.
Do you have any idea?
No.
This one. This is the song they used for the Winnie the Pooh, Mickey Mouse, Tigger. This is the song, right?
Yes.
And they're like 5-year-olds dancing in front of the stage. And these really bizarre costumes. Just you imagine, right? Here we go.
Oh, no.
Mommy, mommy, what are they singing? Pussy good enough to eat.
So pissed. I would be so pissed.
Yeah, baby.
Apparently they were just jumping castles and hula hoops.
I want to meet the person who had the chutzpah to put this event together. I really do.
Just jumping castles. So there's this trend as well on Twitter, Ujiwa King. That's a Sotho term that means, you know, what's bothering you. So the trend has been a lot of people retweeting that tweet and adding to the tweet by adding what is worrying them. So a lot of people over the weekend were adding that, you know, this Disneyland event in Polokwane is what is worrying me, because we were all just duped. So Disney Africa said in a statement, Disney Africa confirms that this event was neither run or sanctioned by the Walt Disney Company. TicketPro, which was also somehow affiliated with this, given the marketing promotion.
Yeah, how you bought your tickets.
Has also had to release a statement. They've confirmed that TicketPro would issue a full refund to ticket holders for this. So they say that TicketPro is not responsible for the delivery and activities of the event. The promoter of an event provides all images, information, and promotional material, basically leading to why they didn't question any of this. And so they added on, TicketPro shares the disappointment of customers and as a token of our good faith, we'll refund each ticket holder. So if you did buy tickets to this event, and you can now get all of your money back from the sad, sad winter in Disneyland, Polokwane.
They didn't use the logo or anything in the, on their promotional poster, but they did promise a whole lot of things that didn't happen.
Polokwane, like what? Like that the spaceship would take you for a trip to Mars?
Ooh, it was going to be held at the Airport Africa Lodge.
Oy, oy, oy.
Faux snow, tug of war.
There was no snow.
Egg spoon race, sack jump, jumping castles, quad bikes, Disney mascots.
That's kind of disappointing.
Live performances, candy corner, sweet hunt, musical chairs, and many more.
See, I would have gone for all that stuff. I would have gone.
I think they will have their pants sued right off them for something like this.
Disney's going to be upset. You watch, they're going to go after these guys.
Oh, shit.
Bye-bye.
You do not mess around with Disney.
Mm-mm. No, it's going to go badly. Ay, ay, ay.
When do you get tipped off that this is not going well?
It's very, very bad.
It's when you realize, that...
If you do nothing else today, just take a look at those terrible outfits that the supposed Disney characters had on. It's the saddest thing.
It kind of looked like the Brazilian gang leader who tried to escape.
Oh, shame. It's so bad.
Silicone mask.
Oh, it's horrible. All right, what else is going on?
Oh, shame.
Well, earlier you were speaking about that Brazilian prison. We have our own notorious new criminal.
Yes.
A 37-year-old man from the Eastern Cape.
Uh-oh.
Who has now been captured for traveling with 57 bags of dacha.
Jesus.
Oh.
That has a street value of 12.8 million rands. Yo, that's a lot.
That's a lot of... Wow, okay.
At this point, you can't claim to be that lady who had meth in her vajayjay.
You definitely can't.
This is very straight up and obvious. He was traveling in a white Toyota Quantum with a trailer. And was
Quantum?
Yeah, it just happened to be a routine roadblock on the roads. And there was a search done on the car. And that's when it was discovered that he was traveling with 57 bags of dacha with this value of 12.8 million rands.
Can you imagine what was going on in his head when he was pulled over? Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah,
how do you begin to explain that?
Ooh.
It's one thing to be traveling with Aden. I don't know how much weed people usually travel with, but 12.8 million rands
That's
worth?
A lot. Sure, he must have been making a big delivery.
He was on his way to the Disney Festival.
Yeah.
It's believed that the skunk dacha was loaded at Lusikisiki and was on its way to the Western Cape, actually.
Okay.
And the Elwell North police were first tipped off about this. So there was actually a proper operation done by stalking this car. And that's when the K9 unit and members from various clusters were sent to find and stop this car. So they already knew that there was something suspicious going on. But I mean, 12.8 million rands. You really think you can get away with something like that?
Yeah,
Would you take the risk?
No, you can't even...
For 12 million rand.
You can't even hide it though. 57 bags. If you're traveling with...
There's no way around
You know, that. 10 bags and you can stuff it underneath your seats and you can...
Then you would.
Stuff it in luggage. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was probably making a delivery, like you said, and it's not him. It's not for his personal use. You know, he's doing a delivery. So there's some dealer involved. And that dealer is like, you got to take this stuff through. It's probably not the driver doesn't even know what he's carrying half the time. I mean, if you see these trucks on the highway, you know they pull over trucks occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that they search the things and these things piled up to they could just barely get under a bridge on the highway.
Yeah.
With mattresses and all kinds of shit. Now, I mean, that's the kind of vehicle that you hide this stuff in. Because who's going to go through all of that shit?
Yeah.
That's how you do it. That's smart.
So here's another decision that you could make in your life.
Okay. Imagine, good decision or a bad decision, Leanne?
Well, let's see. Mm-hmm. Imagine for a moment that you and your family have been planning a holiday overseas.
Yes.
It's been months of anticipation. The time has finally arrived.
Yes.
And suddenly the unthinkable.
What's the unthinkable?
As you're getting ready to leave the country, you get a call from work.
Yes.
They need you to cancel your holiday.
Uh-oh.
And head to Washington, D.C. to meet with the President of the United States.
Well, I think that's kind of... Isn't that important? You'd have to do that, right?
Well, Delta Airlines CEO Ed Bastian didn't.
Well, he didn't give a shit about meeting Trump, huh?
Well, the funny thing is he actually called the meeting. But when it was finally granted, he had already planned this holiday with his family.
He wasn't so keen.
All yeah, right. Okay. and he said outright, I'm sorry, I'm going on holiday with my family. So all the other airlines attended except for Delta Airlines CEO.
Okay.
I'd love to know who had to be the one to break it to the president.
I don't think the president gives a shit. I mean, you know Trump, right? You think he cares?
But excuse me, Mr. President, Mr. Ed won't be able to join the meeting.
That's too bad. I'm so sorry. He's always been an asshole. I'm not that interested in having him there anyway.
That's kind of what he would have said. You know, Trump.
He's on his way to Disneyland.
Trump is totally convinced that he's always right. So he will find a way of spinning it in his head that this guy was actually, I never wanted to meet with him anyway. Mm. You know how Trump is. All right, let's do something inspirational today.
Yes.
Meet someone who really is an inspiration. Someone called Sam Stewart. Sam has some stories to tell us that I think will shift your perspective. She survived breast cancer, an abusive marriage, financial ruin, failed suicide, and body dysmorphia. She's still standing tall. She can teach us a thing or two about resilience. We can hear about her story. She does a whole lot of speaking events now, and I suppose that's a really interesting job to do because you can go around helping people who think that they've got it bad. And, you know, a lot of people like to feel sorry for themselves.
Yeah.
So, and
perspective,
you know,
again.
Correct. And what we need to all realize is how lucky we are. If we've taken any of that for granted, that's the first step towards being miserable and unhappy your whole life long. So she's married. She's been living cancer-free for 13 years now. So grab a seat, Sam. Hello, 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 hello. How are you?
I'm good. Oh,
let me talking about you while you walk in.
Hello.
So first of all, congratulations on getting to the point where you are now inspiring other people with your story, because it certainly wasn't always easy, right? I mean, you've been through the worst of it.
Yeah.
Jesus. I went through that list just now. I'm like, why didn't this woman have the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's actually... actually been... Sometimes when I'm busy writing my book, right? And as I'm going through all of those experiences, I mean, that's like probably only... half of what I've been through.
Does it feel like you're not even talking about yourself?
Yes.
Really? It's a different person?
100%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I have a look at all of the things that have happened over the period of time from when I was very young, I mean, my father abandoned us when I was 6 months old, so that it started off with that. No, wow. I mean, it's actually quite ridiculous because I think people think I make the shit up, you know what I mean? But what I've realized through the process is...
I just got a message from someone here that she's making this shit up.
Because at the end of the day... I honestly believe my purpose is to share my stories.
All right, but hang on. So start at the beginning. So abandoned by?
So the Reader's Digest version is that I was my brother. I've got a brother who lives in London who's 3 years older than me, and my mom was a young mother, and she was abandoned by my dad, and we moved in with my gran, and so I didn't have a male role model when I was growing up. And my mom did the best she could, right, to be able to try and protect me and everything like that. But unfortunately, I fell into the hands of meeting a guy who was fairly much older than me. I mean, I was like 12 years old and he was 17.
Sure.
And my mom, because she did the best she can, I mean, through a lot of therapy, I've realized that actually parents do the best they can. It doesn't mean that...
Even a bad parent usually is trying to do the
right
thing. Sure.
Exactly. And you've got to come to terms with that later on in life when
but you obviously clearly had a lot of anger and you were very resentful for a long time.
Very, very. So I think what happened was, you know, I was...
What, because she couldn't provide for you?
No, well, I think it was more about protection, you know. I think trying
did
to protect
she just
your
let
children...
Did you run amok?
She... Pretty much. Hmm. So, you know, when I was very young, I was going out, getting up to all sorts of shenanigans and doing stupid things and going to school on Monday because I was 13 years old with an 18-year-old and going away for weekends with people that were...
Where was this, Joburg?
Cape Town, Somerset West, yeah. So, small town syndrome. And it seemed normal at the time, but it was so not normal. My upbringing in comparison now when I look at other people, right? And what it did was... This man, unfortunately, was you know, he was bipolar. He
had this is the 18-year-old.
This is, yes. And
you
he,
were
and
dating when you were 13?
Yes. And I ended up marrying said person.
Oh, Jesus.
Who was, unfortunately, very, very abusive to me. And over that period, never hit me specifically, but was you know, punching walls, punching once broke a windscreen in the car.
Just a shithead.
Just completely.
We all know these kinds of 100%. People. 100%. Horrible,
and,
people.
And abusive, had a gun. Like I
and
had
would
that,
obviously be verbally abusive and, too.
You know, I dealt with guns quite a bit. So what happened was I went into a world of survival. And what that survival instinct did was I became a different person. And I stepped out of being who I am now, who I'm finding my way back to myself, actually. That's the process I'm going through.
Sure.
But the scary part was my mom didn't know what to do with me because when I was 13, my hair started falling out. Now, obviously, and I had alopecia, so I would go to school and I had all these big, like, patches on my head and the kids would tease me. And it was because obviously what was happening at home was affecting me physically.
So alopecia sometimes has roots in psychological problems.
100%. So my mom took me to a psychiatrist when I was 13, and guess what they did? They Prozac the fuck out of me.
So
my whole high school career, I was 200 milligrams of Prozac a day. I was a zombie, and I actually found a picture of myself recently where I was like this.
Like a zombie, you were pulling a
literally.
Face,
yeah. I was like, I was nowhere to be seen. And then, you know, I've
got to say at this stage, very hopeful.
No,
I'm feeling great about your
life.
Well,
you know, the thing is that, like, if I look at it, like, he also told me every day that I was ugly and nobody would love me, and it was obviously his insecurities, which I've come to terms with now. But I died a small death, and there was nothing inside me. There was literally nothing.
No,
right?
You were like a carcass.
100%. And then I got married to him. We moved to Johannesburg, and I started working, and I went into the work environment and I actually started doing really well. And people were so nice to me and I actually excelled at a very young age. And it was in IT and it was in a male-dominated environment.
Right.
So I started getting a little bit of chutzpah and I was like, geez, actually maybe I'm not really what this guy says I am, you know. And it kind of came to blows and I just realized that I wanted more for myself. And I left him, and he pissed off to London, and, you know, I was 21 years old. I was in Joburg by myself with no family. And if I look back at that time now, I mean, I had no family, I had no financial support, I had nothing. And I got through that, you know.
Did you maintain a relationship with your mother through that time?
Completely cut her off.
Okay, all right. I just want to rewind a little bit, because there are a few things here I need to ask you about. Yeah. So, first of all, being a 13-year-old with an 18-year-old, it's not a very healthy situation. 13-year-olds don't know as much as they want to know, much as they think they know. They don't know how the hell the world works. And 100%. This guy was basically taking advantage of you.
100%.
He was turning you into what he wanted you to be.
I was a little adult, so I never had a childhood. I never went to sleepovers. I didn't have any kind of – when it actually started, I need to rewind a little bit even more, because the reason that it started was – I actually started doing musical theatre, and I was cast in The Wizard of Oz, and I loved musical theatre. It was my life. I absolutely adored it. And I was triple threat, so I was singing, dancing, and acting. And when I was 12 years old, I had a group of girlfriends who I had grown up with from when I was a picky. And I went to school the one day, and I got cast in the show, and they turned their backs on me, like literally, like boom, like bitch fest. Ignored me at break. So I was on my own crying every day, and I used to come home from school and I was miserable and lonely. And then this guy showed interest in me and suddenly I started feeling like validated. And obviously now I look at it, I was looking for male attention because I didn't have and even though it was in the wrong way, it was there was some weird part of me that was
like there's a reason that we have
we programmed.
Yeah, but there's also a reason that we have laws against men of a certain age taking advantage of girls of a certain
100%.
Age. 100%. Because they turn them into monsters.
100%.
And it's not the girl's fault. You were impressionable. You were looking for this attention.
And I was lonely, and I'd just been outcast by my friends. Right. So I would go to break. And then also, to be honest, it was a bit of a big fat fuck you, because I'd come to school and go, ooh, I've got a boyfriend who's 18.
Right.
So what it did was it validated me, and it was like, oh, and he'd pick me up in his car, and I was in standard six.
I'm going to point out, like, all the girls who had much older boyfriends at high school with me have ended up complete disasters.
100%. Yeah. And I think... When I started working through all of these issues, you know, actually when I got cancer with my mom, because I didn't speak to her for many years. It actually has taken me up until probably very recently, like even in the last 18 months, to come to terms with the fact that she did her best. And I think that's one of the messages that I take out there is, and also to parents, because I haven't had kids, and one of the reasons I haven't had kids is clearly because I feel quite strongly that I wasn't protected, and I was so scared I wouldn't be able to protect a kid myself.
Yeah.
But
so this guy, let me just finish with him because I want to get him out of the picture.
Yes.
There are a lot of these men, and he obviously had tremendous insecurity because for him it was the inverse of you have this older boyfriend who's cool, who's picking up from school. All of his friends were mocking him because he had this 13-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah.
By the way, was it sexual?
Well, this is where the really fucked up part comes in, because you know, I mean, I like he pretty much was allowed to move in to my bedroom when I was 15 because his parents kicked him out.
Oh my God.
So he moved into my Laura Ashley 3-quarter bed and stayed with me while I was at school, you know? And the sad part was that if I look back then, like I don't know how I managed to get through it, but I do know that it really, really, I died inside. Like there was nothing there. Like it literally was a shell, like you say, you know. And the only thing that I believe really saved me was the fact that somewhere deep inside, and I think we all have it, that will to survive and that wanting to go on. Like, I don't know what it is, and I can't put my finger on it, and what, but that's always been there through all of that stuff. There's just always been that will to get up.
All right, so now we are in. Let's just fast forward a little bit to where we were before I interrupted you. So now you're in Joburg, you've got a job, you're doing quite well at that job, you've managed to turf this dude, he's gone away.
Yes.
But you're kind of alone.
So I magnificently managed to find somebody who, if I look at relationships, because I've had many, many men in my life, and I was obviously looking for something specific, but I've dated from all spectrums of life. Like, you know, I've dated because I've got a lot of depth as a human, and I connect with a lot of people from different types of. I'm that person. You can put me with the artist. You can put me with a.
Yeah, no, you've got this. You've got a real personality.
So I have, and I can, and I also love people, and I love humans. Like I really enjoy seeing what really makes people tick. So, you know, when I dated a lot of people, I was obviously looking for something, but I would be attracted to something in somebody. And I found this guy who really, really helped me get over all of the issues that I'd had with my ex. But I realized he was the savior. And I think a lot of women, we go for that. We don't look for somebody who's actually going to be our partner. We look for someone who's going to save us.
Yeah.
And he saved me because he told me, I mean, my ex had told me, nobody will love you. You're ugly. Don't look at yourself in the mirror. And that's where the body dysmorphia came from. I hated myself. Like,
right, so
I honestly.
How does this manifest?
So how it manifests is because you've got somebody that is so insecure about themselves and you leaving them, they make you feel shit about yourself so that you don't leave, pretty much.
So that you think that he's
all you've got. Yeah. Nobody's going to love you. You are hideous. Yeah. And look at yourself. And guess what happened? My hair started falling out. Of course. I started manifesting that. You know, and
that might have been where, you know, I know you have that the gene for the breast cancer, but it might also have been. We don't know what triggers cancer. 100%. It could be
cancer's
psychological.
Known
it could
for,
be
for
it's definitely
being triggered by traumatic events.
100%, 100%. And I think there were all of these things that kind of, you know, like a Rubik's cube, worked together to get me to that point, right? And also, if you look at left breast and right breast and everything like that, right breast is father issues. So it's quite interesting
Really? Who tells you that's interesting.
Well, that is just definitive. If you go and read up about it, you have your left breast and your right breast in terms of metaphysical studies. That is what people believe, is that your connection to your father. And I mean, at the end of the day, from my point of view, I just realized men in general were an issue for me. Masculine energy, everything like that was a problem for me. So I was looking for validation through being a Lolita as a young girl. That was the problem.
Right.
I was, and I've researched this as well. Like, I find that if you want attention, you're going to look for it in any way. So what happened with me was I got male attention through the way I looked, but that didn't make me feel good. So actually, it actually disempowered me, which is the stupid thing. So the more attention I got, the more dirty I felt and the more awful I felt, because it wasn't the right kind of love that I was getting, you know, but it was the only way understood how to get
this,
attention.
You must see this on social media now. You must see young girls doing exactly the
100%.
Same thing. Because there's social media now, it's so much worse, right? Because
100%.
You're getting attention from people you don't even know.
Exactly.
And who you don't even get to see their facial expressions or any of that stuff to figure out whether they're a creep or not.
Exactly. And it's empty.
So, okay, we've got the body dysmorphia. I mean, this sounds like an absolute, this is a clusterfuck. You're basically you're the Afghanistan of people.
No, I'm a complete clusterfuck. And then I had this guy who definitely awakened my spirituality in terms of discovering the beauty inside me, but it was going to be a long road. He was never going to be able to save me. So our relationship lasted 6 years, but broke up because of me, because I was not whole. And
so
I was
damaged,
really,
sure.
really damaged goods, like really bad. I mean, I don't even know. Like,
were you impossible emotionally to deal with? Were you unstable?
I was. If I have to answer that and think about it really clearly and cleverly, I think I was very reactive in terms of what was happening around me. I thought it was happening to me.
Yeah.
Because I hated myself. Like, I really thought I was worth nothing, you know. But if you'd asked me then, I wouldn't have said that. If you'd asked me then, I would have said,
it's only
I'm amazing.
Retrospectively,
because
see it.
I was like, oh, I'm amazing, this and this and this, because I built this shell of protection around me to be able to survive. Otherwise, I would have just fallen apart, you know. And also, at that point in time, I was in a very male-dominated environment, because IT back in the late 90s, you know.
There
were no women there. I was a product manager when everybody around me had MBAs and degrees and I had nothing. So I was school of hard knocks. And guess what? I needed to prove myself. So you know, I was actually very defensive in my attitude, and I would have been one of those people that would have pissed people off because I would have acted like I knew better. But it was all just because I had no self-worth at all. I like really didn't enjoy who I was as a person.
See, the reason I'm interested in talking to you, and especially now that I've heard a little bit more, is that this is not just a Sam situation.
No.
There are so many women and men in this country who are going through exactly the same thing. Self-worth issues are a 100%. Big, big deal. It's a big hole in people's lives, and it's unfulfilled. And it's unfillable. Like, you can't just fix that with a plaster.
Mm. Well, the one thing I've come to, and I'm so glad you said that, because I actually believe that is my purpose. Like, the only reason that I'm able to give hope to people is because I believe in my own value now.
See, when you've got nothing to lose, if you don't believe in your own value and you've got nothing to lose, then you will just damage everyone around you.
Exactly.
You will be...
But it's not authentic. No. Because if you don't believe in it, and you know, and I think that's one of the things that I've come to realize why, like, I don't prepare when I go talk. For me, the speaking is a facilitation process to help other people start looking at themselves and what they're going through.
And they'll listen to you because it's an authentic story from you.
Yeah, and also because I think you can't bullshit this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been through... And I've also been through the part where I was bullshitting.
Of course.
So I lived a lie for a very long time, you know. And I think coming out with it and standing up and going, I was not living in my truth. I think that almost, it allows people a bit of a freedom to step out and go, well, that's okay. Maybe I can do that too. Because
all right,
we all want
to... But let's not pretend you just got to this point easily, because there was also a suicide attempt.
No. I mean, that's so much later. But I mean, you know, after my ex and I broke up, this guy that really, really did help me and looked at me in a way that I'd never been looked at before, and not in a sexual way, in a human way. I see you kind of avatar way.
He didn't objectify.
Way. You know, he didn't objectify me. He saw beauty in me that was not external, and he saw beauty in me that I had no idea existed. And funny enough, I didn't even see that up until much later. But we broke up because I just was it was a mess. It was completely a mess. And after that, there were many relationships, and then I just went off the rails. It was just like, date as many guys as possible.
Is this in your 20s?
Because, this is in my 20s. So, I mean, this was probably around the age of like 26. And, you know, it was quite interesting, because it was really not doing anything for me. It was actually just making me feel even worse because all of the guys I was going for were complete assholes.
Yeah.
Because I was just validating the fact that I was not good enough. So I would choose these guys.
You attract what you put out.
And,
right?
And I didn't think I was good enough for a stable relationship. And also, I didn't actually even understand what that was, let's be clear. Like, for me, stability was boring. Because you also need to understand when you've grown up and you've had that kind of discord and that kind of up and down. Like, I didn't understand what coming home was and just being at home and having dinner and everything. I was like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable. And also, that would mean that I would have to take a look at myself.
Not cool.
It would become too quiet.
It would become too quiet, which would make it too loud.
Yes. You know, I understand
so,
that.
Yeah.
So when did the suicidal stuff come
around? Well, the suicidal stuff has only come around recently. And what's quite interesting is if I take a step back and go to the cancer portion, I was 29 when I was diagnosed, right? But I've had 152 treatments in the chemo room. I was in the chemo room 152 times.
Jesus. Over 10 years. God.
So when I fought Discovery for the Herceptin, 6 months later, after we stopped the Herceptin, the cancer came back.
Right.
So my doctors were like, well, clearly the Herceptin's working. Let's put her on it.
We need this.
So
you had to fight with them.
So I had to fight with them. And after that, going on that drug, and when the cancer came back, after I'd stopped it, everyone went, fuck, better put you on it. And yes, it's a miracle drug, and 100% I'm alive 14 years later. But after 10 years and 152 treatments, my memory and my life started becoming very fragmented and terrible. And my instant access memory. Like, if I was speaking to you on the phone, let's say you called me and I put down the phone, immediately I wouldn't remember it.
Mm. Just, is this the Herceptin?
The Herceptin, yeah. But wow. But remember, you're only supposed to have 1 year's worth of treatment. I had 152 of them.
Jeez.
So because I was so high risk, they were like, and I could tolerate it. And it's not supposed to be intolerable. But I mean, obviously any drug that's an intravenous drug at that for that long is going to have some kind of effect. And also, remember, I had like cancer twice. I had chemo twice. I've had a lot of chemicals in my body, and it was hard, you know. So my husband and I took the decision that we phoned my doctor and we said, listen, like, I can't function, because at this point in time I was back in a corporate job and I couldn't remember
what you were doing 5 minutes ago.
And I was coming home crying. I couldn't. And everyone says to me, they go, oh, yeah, but my memory's bad. I know. And I'm like, no, dude. Like, you don't understand. It's literally like you would get up out of here and I'd where am I going? So we took the decision to stop the treatment. And then slowly but surely, over like a year treat period, maybe a year later or so, I started sinking into depression. But I didn't realize it because it's such a slippery slope. And it happens very quickly. But very sort of gradually, if that makes sense. And I woke up one day and I was in the doldrums. And my poor husband didn't know what to do because he just watched me kind of going like this. And now I have realized that it's because the Herceptin was a crutch. I thought it was keeping me alive.
All right. So you
and I stopped it and I believed I was going to die.
Oh. So you thought, when I don't do this, it's over.
And that was like, but I realize now it wasn't a conscious thing that I was aware of, but slowly my left brain somewhere was going, well, there's no point now. What's going to happen? You may as well give up. And I actually just lost my will through.
How do you? Okay. So after all of this misery and anguish, and it really, this is just a horrible story. I mean, I normally avoid people like you at a dinner party, like the plague. I mean, it's just depressing and sad and shit. And also, like, we live in a world now where everybody has a story.
Story, yeah.
Yours is particularly, like, hectic.
Yeah.
How do you get out of that? And how do you make a life? So, how do you make sense of this?
So this is the beautiful part about it. And this is the extraordinary part about it, is that I believe that that is my purpose. I honestly now am of the opinion that all of these things have happened to me because I have the ability to get out of them.
Where does it come from?
And where it comes from is a belief in wanting to help others through my experiences. the reason that I can get up in the morning is because I know that through sharing my story, somebody else is going to be able to find the hope to be able to get up and have another day.
And you never had a point of being angry or
Of course I am. Completely. I'm not a robot either. And this is the amazing thing. Like when I go and speak to women and I say, and because I particularly focus on women, that I think they come to me afterwards and say, thank you for not telling us to be more organized. Thank you for not telling us to, you know, these motivational speakers that come up and go, do this, do that, and whatever. And I'm like, life is shit and life is hard. But you know what? Life is also amazing and beautiful. And I have an extraordinary life. And when you say to me, how? 100% because I am of the opinion that I create my own reality.
So hang on. You're married now?
Yes.
To the guy?
To, and this is another story. So he was my next door neighbor 20 years ago in Joburg. And I always thought he was the hottest thing ever, and we actually dated for a very short period of time, but he had two stepdaughters who are light of my life now, which are twins, and they're 21, and they were 3 years old, and I was like 25 wanting to go jawl at the club, and he was like, you need to be at home, and I said, no, screw it. Don't want to be doing
so
that.
You left him then.
Left him then, and the timing didn't work out, and he always said I was the one that got away, and I hated him. And he's listening, by the way. He's a massive fan of your show. And I'm very sad Gords isn't here because he loves him. So so the universe works in mysterious ways. I'm very spiritual and I believe in universal energy. 100%. That's how I got out of this. Because we dated. I then dissed the Oak, like so badly. I moved to Cape Town because I have an NGO that I start saving people with after the cancer thing. I have a cancer access program for cancer patients that was founded by Livestrong and American Cancer Society. Mm-hmm. And I had a call center and people used to call in and they would get treatment. And anyway, that was another thing. And I ended up having a nervous breakdown there because 7 years later I was helping people and it was a disaster. So I moved back to Cape Town, to my home. And then guess what? This Oak ends up being my customer.
Oh, wow.
Okay. In IT... we'd never even met in the IT context. He was my next door neighbor. One day I get an email saying, you've got a new customer. You need to go and meet him. It's Alan Stewart. And I get a private email in from him. Samantha Gallier, you can run, but you can't hide. And I'm like, oh my God.
So there was
a serious connection that lasted over time. 100%. And there's a serious story. And I remember getting ready to go and see him that day and going, I hope he's bald and fat. I hope he's bald and fat. And I walked in and he was like the hottest thing ever. And I went, oh, damn you. Damn you.
So did you two
and so he
strike it up again?
Immediately. And so he is the reason, 100%, that over these last, we've been married 4 years now, over this last period of time, that I have been able to start seeing who I really am because of the way he looks at me. Mm-hmm. So his love for me, which is completely unconditional and completely selfless, 100%, has allowed me the gift of really being able to see who I am.
Sure.
Which the story goes, like, that is exactly why I have to do this, because it's possible to come out of it. But I also believe...
You have a really, really interesting energy. Like, I don't like talking metaphysically because I don't really understand all of it. But the fact is, like, you're bouncing off the walls energy-wise, which is incredible. Yeah. And despite everything you've been through, that's quite a cool...
I'm grateful.
Characteristic.
I'm grateful. And people say to me, like, why, whatever. That's why I believe it's my purpose, because I don't understand it either, to be honest. And, I mean, I could be here for 2 days talking about the things I've been through, you know. But I do know this, that surrounding yourself with people that want the best for you, having people in your life that build you up, having and whether it's family or not, get rid of them if they don't have your best interests at heart. I had so many people around me for so long that were trying to drain me and trying to – I know.
And look, some of them you chose, obviously.
100% it was me. Not even some of it. It all was. And I think that the biggest part of the portion of it is accepting responsibility for the things that you did.
Right.
Because when – and I know you don't like speaking metaphysically because we don't understand it, and I was watching What the Bleep Do We Know, if you remember that video. I was watching it last night again. And I honestly believe that when I'm at my most powerful, it's when I'm creating. Mm. and that I have the ability to create. Well, I think that's true for
That's true for God. So it's as true for him as it is for everyone else.
Everybody.
When you're creating, you're at your full potential.
100%. Yeah. But the beauty about creating is that when you start seeing synchronicity and when you start living your purpose and doing things that fill you up as a human, the things just start happening. Mm. And it's actually just so amazing how you don't actually have to try that hard. When you're trying hard, that's when everything just doesn't work and goes against doesn't you fit, and you just yeah. And I always say, like, when you have to try too hard, then you
it's
need
to
quit.
To, yeah,
it's not meant to be. Because for all of this time, all of the stuff that I went through, God, I was trying so hard. It was like climbing up the mountain with my, you know, with a broken broken arm and now I realize, like, when I wake up and I get up and I don't try and I just be myself, everything magically just happens.
It flow.
So,
well, listen, I mean, I think your story is amazing. Now you're going around doing these talks.
Yeah.
I mean, where can people see you? What's the...
Well, I've just started. So thanks to my husband. He said, listen, your purpose is to go and give people hope. So I just want to share a story which I think is really impactful for me in deciding that I need to do this. So I was asked to speak at a Women's Day event, and it was a legal firm.
Yeah.
And so I got there, and it was all female lawyers.
Right.
Who clearly traditionally don't, are quite hardcore.
They're bitches, yeah.
And I mean, I understand the whole corporate thing and everything like that.
I can only get away with saying that because my sister is one. So.
And you know, I mean, obviously, I've been surrounded by lawyers through all the work that I did, so I know them quite well. And I stood up there and I gave a talk and I obviously cried the way I do, and I connected because it's important to just be in the moment. And afterwards, one of the women came to me and said to me, and she was the head of Bidvest Legalman.
Wow.
So, I mean, these weren't people, random people. And it was a life-changing moment for me. She said, Sam, after you spoke, we've been sitting around the table, strangers, and we've been sharing stories with each other of deepest, darkest secrets we haven't even told people close to us.
Uh-oh, you've opened up the sisterhood of the traveling
You gave
pants.
Us, exactly. Oh, you gosh. Gave, and you know what she said? She said, I believe you gave us the safety to share our stories. And I was like, that is my purpose.
Yeah.
If I can give people the safety, so I want to set up something like Sam Safe Space, which is a podcast where I can, where I can speak to women, because whatever it is, I don't know, and thank you, universe, for it, somehow I'm able to disarm people. And that's the gift. And in disarming people and allowing them to share their stories, they find freedom, right? I mean, that.
And then you exit the room and the healing continues.
And the healing continues. So for me, I heal through speaking. And however that means, if it's – my husband loves me because he can't go anywhere with me because I know everybody and I speak to everybody and I love people. So if it's speaking to somebody in the spa, at the counter, or whatever it is, my journey is about allowing people to start looking at themselves in a different way through my experiences. Yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, congratulations.
That's a reminder.
Jesus. Yeah. Things you've been through. I'm not going to complain about my life at all today.
It's not meant to be a negative thing. So everybody listening, please believe me. It's really, really...
It's a good reminder.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're out of time as it is, so we got to get out of here. But thank you very much, Sam Stewart. Very nice to meet you.
You too.
Sam Stewart is... how old are you now?
I am 43.
Wow. Okay. No cancer?
Healthier than I've ever been.
Yay.
Awesome.
As you see me.
Fantastic. All right, there we go.
Thank you.
Lots of things to be hopeful about this Wednesday morning.
Yes, there are.
CliffCentral.com. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
This is CliffCentral.com.